The opinions expressed during this episode of East West Audio Body Shop are solely those of the panelists, and not of the producers of East West Audio Body Shop, nor its sponsors.
Hi, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Well, one of the things that built our industry was the pay-to-play sites. Love them or hate them, we're going to have a roundtable discussion with some people that have some opinions on how to use them and if they're affecting the overall rates in our business.
This is a discussion any of you that are aspiring voice talent and professional voice actors do not want to miss. You really should be here live, and that way you can ask questions of our esteemed panel in the chat room, who will be
the Nether Voice, Paul Strickwerda, Matt Kalrick, an Aussie, Peter Bishop, a Brit, and from New York, the ex, Melissa Axelberth. They'll all be joining us here for a great discussion. That's coming up tonight on EWABS.
He is the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He is a voice actor and the home studio master. Hailing from Buffalo, New York, his home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording are unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. My name is Pete Christofferson, and this episode of East West Audio Body Shop is brought to you by Edge Studio, providers of voiceover education, production, and technology. Harlan Hogan's Voiceover Essentials, products hand-picked for voice actors. The Home Studio Master. Get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. And Voiceover Extra, your one-stop resource for voiceover success. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his soon-to-be former penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. For the next 45 days, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Very good. All righty.
Got some practice.
Yeah, we've only been practicing for 190 episodes, kids.
Don't remind me.
I'm trying. Well, it's only going to get worse. Tonight, we've got another fabulous show because George and I don't have to say anything. We have four great guests. We're going to be talking about the pay-to-plays, talk a little bit about the rates and all this stuff. And, of course, we want your input. So those of you in the chat room, feel free to chime in. And and if you have a comment or a question, J.S. Gilbert here yet? Okay. You know, we could have had him on, too, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with that. But we do have a little bit of EWABS news, so if you have that queued up, we can...
Oh, okay.
Time now to take a look at the news. EWABS News.
All righty. Well, here's an actual press release, some actual voiceover news. We've been, like, trying to find voiceover news, but here's some actual stuff. Last week, Dustin Ipaw submitted his resignation as president of World Voices Organization. He did an amazing job as president, taking us from four members, which was essentially four guys in a car in Ventura, California, saying, you know, we should be doing this, to we now have over 400 members in World Voices. And we'd like to congratulate Dustin on a job well done. But he's stepping down. I think WovoCon probably just made his ears bleed. And so he's going to take it easy and spend some time with his other wife, his actual wife, not Wovo.
Good idea.
Yeah. And but the board has elected a good friend of our show and a good friend of just about everybody in this business, Dave Quivassier, is interim president, and someone who's going to be on our show tonight, Peter Bishop, as the executive vice president. So if Mr. America cannot complete his duties then Bish will be in charge if we let him. So it's just an interim thing, but Dave's going to be running the show until 2016, and then we'll have new board elections. So that'll be really cool. But congratulations to you, Peter, and to Dave, because you know you guys are the core of what this organization is all about, and I'm real happy that we have a nice, smooth transition from somebody I really like to somebody else I really like. Makes things a lot easier. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about the pay-to-plays, and we've got joining us live in the studio tonight, we have, by happenstance, one of our favorite people, the ex, Melissa Exelberth, is there with George.
Hello.
You can say hi.
Hello.
There you go. Paul Straquerda, Matt Kalrick, and Peter Bishop, who I've already mentioned three or four times already in the last 45 seconds. But we're going to talk about the pay to plays. Now, this is something that we're all aware of as voice actors. And I think most of us, when we just got into this, were like, well, how are we going to find work? And the pay to plays were a great place to start. You know, myself, I was on, you know, the two big ones, like since like 2003, 2004. Wow. And, they once told me, we remember your name was like a name on a whiteboard. So, and I'm sure that's the case with everybody else.
That's pretty amazing. You've been there since the genesis of these. How do you remember when they were released? I mean, which one came first?
I think one, two, three came first, and then voices.com was International Voices.
Okay.
And then they changed their name, mm-hmm. and a lot of other things too. Let's get to our panel of experts here, because I really don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to talk. I want to listen to these people talk. Yeah. We invited them onto the show tonight, and all of them have a lack of something to say about this subject. If you read the forums or read their blogs and see these things, why don't we start off with Peter Bishop? Because Bish, now how long are you still on the pay to plays, or how long have you been on them?
I have no paid subscriptions to pay to plays left. I have the free listing still up, but I'll be taking that down as soon as I remember. It's on the list of things to do. I guess I joined back in, I suppose I stuck with them for about 5 years until it just got to a point where it didn't fit my business model anymore. There was too much chasing around after low price jobs. It was very time consuming. Now, I should say that I was a niche talent. I'm not up against the thousands of Americans on the site. This is very American continent, North American centric. So I was in a smaller pool of people fishing after a smaller pool of jobs. So I wasn't getting the 30, 40, 50, 60 a day that some were. So I could pick and choose a bit better. And it wasn't as time consuming for me. But I'd had enough about 6 months ago and decided to take that time and put it into more direct marketing and that sort of thing, which has paid off nicely.
That's smart. I should have gone ladies first, but but you know, Peter's face was there, and I'm like, all right, go to that. You know, do I need to take one?
Whatever's in front of you.
that's right. Melissa, what about you?
I'm on the pay to plays, but I don't really do anything with them. Somebody will reach out to me every so often and ask me for a private audition. And if I look at the job and it seems like something I'd like to do, then I'll do it. But what I've noticed is, it's barely worth, it's not even worth auditioning for half the things they post there. If I do get something and it looks like a quality job and the rates are low, I may take the time to audition for it, but I will give them my rate. And very often they'll pay it. So that's, you know, but that's a result of knowing.
That's your first gold nugget, whoever's keeping score.
Well,
give them your rate.
Well, no, absolutely. Because I don't work for a lot of the rates that most of the jobs these days are being posted for, and they've declined incredibly over the last few years.
Don't assume that they don't want to pay you your rate, right? Because they're maybe way more ignorant than most voice actors in terms of
Yes. They just, you know, it's so often in, especially in the last few years, that people are stumbling around in the dark. Many people, they don't really know the business of the business, and they're making it up.
Sure.
And, you know, there are there are entities out there that are helping them make it up. And so they're really stumbling around in the dark. So if I believe it's a quality job, you can often tell that by the way the script is written.
It goes a long way.
And if it's something that I know that I'm right for, then I'll audition. I'll tell them what my rate is. And very often they'll pay my rate.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. You're not a Japanese male, and it's usually like, no, it's not for me. It's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Matt Colrick, I found this fascinating. As we were doing our research today, because we actually do research on this show, you are an Australian voice actor, but you're permanently based out there in Victoria, British Columbia, which is a beautiful town, by the way.
Yes.
Now, despite graduating with a Bachelor of Music majoring in classical performance, you decided to play it safe and move into a more stable career in voiceover.
That sounds a little familiar.
Yeah, at the end of my degree, I said to my parents, Mom and Dad, I want to be a voice actor. And they're like, okay, what's that? No, I was getting into voiceover through my music degree and was drawn to that. And by the end of the degree, I knew I wanted to do voiceover rather than music. And having music as a safety net career is just a joke I make.
Right. Now, how long have you been in North America?
Over 4 years now, since start of 2011.
Yeah. Now, how have you been using that? Did you get on the pay to plays as soon as you got here, or were right back when you were in Oz, or what?
Well, like Vish, and probably like a lot of people, I started on the pay to play. I started my career with the pay to plays, and it was a piece of the pie back then. And I got a lot of my regular clients through Voice123, and at the time I was with voices.com. And then lately it has become something closer to what Melissa's talking about. I'm on there. I more take what comes through. I do audition for some really specific jobs that I think I'm suitable for, but more often than not, I'm focusing more on agent auditions and direct contact. And I left Voice123 and voices.com. And for a while, I was just using real-time casting, which is a relatively new player in the field. And I'm currently doing a bit of a test with Bidalgo. Bidalgo has always been a really interesting website for me in that it opens up a lot of opportunities for English-speaking talent, like Americans, Brits, what have you, that I feel I wouldn't have access to outside of that website, because there's the whole language and the cultural barrier. Yeah. So I've kind of been playing around with that and having some success with Bidalgo as well.
Really? Just some good paying stuff, or because I'm on there and it seems to be slightly better paying stuff. Because it's in euros.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also a lot of, it's different work than what I usually do. The majority of my work is Aussie, and then I do some American accent work. But then what I've booked through Bidalgo is, I'm not authentic like Paul. I'm basically just doing bad accents consistently. And that is my take on the global accent that a lot of the buyers in Europe are looking for.
There's some marketing right there.
Yeah,
bad accents consistently.
That's right. Yeah, when they say transatlantic, like the first time I did it, the first time I booked a serious transatlantic or, you know,
a global accent,
was doing a really poor South African accent. And but it booked because no one could really place it.
That's what they want, though.
That's right.
They want something that sounds like you learned English elsewhere. That's basically what it is. They don't want anything specific. They want you to sound cultured.
They want you to sound exotic.
They want you to sound cultured. That's what they want.
Also joining us from Pennsylvania, one of my favorite people in this business, because he always has something interesting to say, and you just like, Paul's talking, gotta listen. An author of a great book, which was a great read, by the way, Making Money in Your PJs, which you can see over his left shoulder there, even though that's not him on the cover, just some hunky guy. But welcome to the show, Paul. Now, Have you had any experience with the pay to play? So you've been, you still have a profile there, or did you build your business on it, or what?
I have years and years of experience on Voices.com, Voice123. I've done VoiceOver Planet and Bodalgo. Currently, I'm like Matt, I'm only on Bodalgo because that gave me the best return for my investment. Plus, you know, they're based in Munich. They're a European company, and that is my big market. And what I found is not only are the jobs a little bit better paying, although it's going down, gotta say, and the exchange rate isn't that favorable either anymore, but the people are really nice. You know, normally when you audition on voices.com or voice123, you don't hear a thing. On Bodalgo, I got apology letters from people saying, oh, your audition was great, but just not what we needed. So sorry, but we'll keep you in mind. And I've never had that before. People are really, really personable, and I like that. Yeah, I've been really successful, so that's the only membership that that I will keep. I joined Voices.com in 2009, and when I wrote that book that you're referring to, I really wanted to find out how successful or not successful I was. So I'll just give you two short paragraphs from what I wrote about Voices.com, and it's in the chapter Leaving Voices.com. So I write, in 2014, I have a 5-star rating, well over 5,400 listens, more than any other Dutch talent on Voices.com, and I have landed a total of 10 jobs, earning me a whopping $2,740.89. And God only knows how many auditions I've had to submit before being selected. Now, this can only mean one of two things. Either I stink at playing the pay-to-play game, or I am talentless, a misguided soul who should be doing something useful with his life. There you have it in a nutshell.
Take that as you will. Take it as you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm still, you know, I have a free profile, and every once in a while people then invite me. Do you want to do like 500 pages for $100? No, thank you. I'll try what Melissa does and say, you know, I'll do it for $1,000 and say, no, thank you. It's just not worth it. And like Peter, I really started doing much, much better when I just left those sites, and it saved me so much time, and I invested all the money that I saved in really getting a good online profile, an updated website, and all that sort of thing. So I'm basically done with pay to play.
Much better.
I should throw in though about the leaving a free profile up there. This only happened a week or so back. I have a free profile up on Voice123 as well. And I was contacted out of the blue by someone. I mean, the gig didn't pan out in the end, but it would have been a very nice gig for a sketch in a major comedy chat show thing. But they found me there. They needed a tame Brit with ISDN quickly. So it's a way to be found. Now, whether there's implications with being found in certain places, like under a rock, is debatable. But it can work out, just being there to be found.
Well, I would tend to think that, you know, and I think most of us have discovered that the way to, you have to be online, and that you never know who's watching or where they're searching or how they're searching, you know, whether they come across you by accident or not. If they like what they hear, they're going to at least try and contact you and say, hey, you would be good for this. You know, how many times have we all been contacted by somebody and you say, all right, how did you find me? And usually the response is, on the internet? Because you'll be a little more specific.
Yeah.
You can never really tell. How many times do people get hired off of the pay-to-play networks without ever, you know, having to post an audition or anything?
Well, that's the good thing about Voice 123. You can still do that. Voices.com does not allow you to contact clients outside of their network. Yep. And there used to be a way around that because you could write your profile, and in your profile, you could put your contact information and your phone number. But just before the show, I checked my free profile at voices.com, and they removed that too. So there's not a way, if clients find you through voices.com, to get through to you other than through their system.
And that's totally detrimental. It's detrimental to the industry. What they're trying to do by doing that is they're trying to turn us into a commodity where we can only be shoved through them. We can only be found through them. And where they can price us at whatever price point they choose, they're in control. We become sugar. That's basically it. Sell high, buy low. And it's detrimental to the industry. It's detrimental to talent. And talent and producers need to be educated as to the business of the business. Because these people don't know our business. They know websites.
It's an interesting point. And we'll talk about that. By the way, there is a huge throng watching our show tonight. Not that there isn't usually a huge throng every week, but it just seems to be, the meter seems to be peaking pretty good tonight. So this is a hot topic that everybody wants to talk about. And we're not going to cool things off here. I can just tell. But we've got a lot more coming up here on East West Audio Body Shop. So don't go away. But first, before we go to an actual break, I have to start with a live spot for our good friend, who we all know and love, Harlan Hogan, over at voiceoveressentials.com, who has been with us since the beginning of the dawn of time, as Harlan himself actually has been. He has a great site. Voiceoveressentials.com has everything you could possibly need if you are in voiceover. Everything. He's got microphones. You can get access to, of course, his signature series VO1A, which is a great microphone at a great price point. And you can get it on that site. And he offers great customer service. If you don't like it, you can return it. But the thing is you will love it, so you won't return it. That's how confident he is in his products, especially that VO1A. And I know a lot of people using it. I use it in a lot of different situations. I actually used it in recording a Gilbert and Sullivan musical last week, and it sounded fabulous. It worked really well in the mix. But as a voiceover mic, even better, because it was designed specifically for voiceover. And you can get it there at voiceoveressentials.com, and I highly recommend that particular microphone and all of the other great stuff that Harlan has over there.
He stands behind it. Behind this stuff, you know what I mean?
He actually comes with it. When the package arrives, he's actually the one holding it.
It takes a lot of chutzpah. Is that how you say it, Dan?
Chutzpah.
All right. It takes a lot of chutzpah to put your name on something. A lot. So say what you will about people that do this, but believe me, it's you know, to put your name on something is a big deal. And so, I mean, when you're buying it, you're buying something that Harlan clearly feels strongly about. And if you don't like it, he'll make it right. You know,
he will.
You got to try these things out in your home studio. You got to actually use the mic in your home studio to know. And he knows that. So he'll make sure that you can do that.
That's right. So go on over to voiceoveressentials.com. And actually, the best way to get there is if you scroll to the bottom of the very page you're watching this very show on right at this very moment. You'll see a picture of Harlan there talking into his legendary Portabooth Pro. And it will launch you right to voiceoveressentials.com. So while you're watching the show, go over there and buy everything he has on his shelf.
But make sure you right click and click open in new tab. So you don't lose the show.
So you don't lose the show.
It's very important.
Yes. Anyway, thanks, Harlan, for being with us for 190 episodes.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And really, we'll be right back after this. Are you confused about how to set up and maintain a professional quality voiceover studio? No wonder. The information out there is mostly mythology. This is the best microphone to use. You have to have a preamp.
You need a soundproof booth. This software is the best. Your audio must be broadcast quality. Consult with someone who knows the truth. Someone who's been there, in the trenches, doing voiceover for over 30 years. Someone with unparalleled experience with voiceover studios, who's worked with hundreds of voice actors and designed hundreds of personal studios. He knows how to teach and cares about your success. In one of the harshest environments known to voiceover, your home. Dan Leonard, the Home Studio Master. Separate myth from fact and get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. Contact the Home Studio Master at homevoiceoverstudio.com. Drop off a specimen of your dry audio for a free analysis.
Dad?
Yeah, honey?
When you watch East West Audio Body Shop, why do you keep hitting your forehead?
And why do you keep yelling WTF?
And what does WTF even mean?
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Yeah, that's what it means.
I think you made that up.
Girls, just go do your homework. Right now I'm watching George and Dan on EWABS.
Okay.
And we are back here at East West Audio Body Shop talking about pay-to-play networks tonight. We haven't done a roundtable in a while, and I'm glad to have our great guests on here, Melissa Exelberth, Peter Bishop, Matt Kalrick, and Paul Strickwitter, joining us from Pennsylvania from his fabulous self-built studio, which was also a great read, by the way.
Turns out to be a great night for me. Thank you very much.
It is. I'm just pushing all your stuff here. Now, you were saying, Paul, that you were saying that your profile has been taken down from one of those sites.
No, it's not been taken down, but the contact information is, and I'm looking at right now. I still have to figure out how to share my screen here with you guys. Okay, let's see if you can see this profile like so.
And there it is.
Voila. Yeah. See, a 5-star Dutch native voice talent, a neutral English speaker, la, la, la. But then it says, find me at, website hidden, email me directly at, email hidden, or call me at, phone hidden. Now, that did not used to be hidden. You know, I took all the training that I could get into, getting the best profile possible. And Michael J. Collins, friend of the show, friend of voices.com, gave me that tip and said, this is the place where you can put your contact information directly.
J. Michael Collins, yeah. Yeah, he's a
good guy. Yeah. And like I said before, I checked my profile right before the show, and all of a sudden, it's no longer there. Mm. So anyway, that's just one of the things that I don't really like about what Voices is doing. Let's see if I can get rid of this screenshot.
Yeah, you just have to click the button in the middle of the top where it says stop sharing screen.
Okay. Yes, I see what you mean.
There you go.
Well, have you thought about doing a series of...
Go ahead, Matt. Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
Have you thought about doing a series of encrypted mathematical formulas to give the client your email address on your profile? Really very simple.
Maybe you could help me with that. Maybe you can sing it for me. I'll incorporate that. Maybe I should upload it in the demo, the front of a demo or something like that. And start the... Probably they won't be able to get to that. Okay. But, I think the truth about all these sites, and not all of them are created equal, but I look at them as predators, because they really prey on the naive and the uninformed, the people who have a dream, and they promise the world to you. So millions of dollars already given out to voice talent, new jobs every day. They charge an arm and a leg, and they treat their members like dirt. And once you sign up, you discover it's a crapshoot. Too many dogs are fighting over the same meatless bone. I mean, it's not unusual that a $150 job attracts over 150 hopefuls. Most of these people are even willing to do it for less than $150. Mm-hmm. And that would be my next point. I'm happy to talk about the pay-to-plays, but we got to say, okay, it's our responsibility too as voice talent, because nobody's forcing us to sell ourselves for that much or that little amount of money. We don't have to become a member. We play a big part too. They just enable us to do it because they make it so darn easy. I think these sites are great for the lazy, because you pay an amount of money, and as soon as you're a member, you've uploaded a profile and a demo, You look at your inbox every day and say, bang, 20 new great-looking auditions.
What do you think makes it successful? I mean, there are those who are successful on some of these platforms, right? Like on any platform, there's some really successful folks using it. We mentioned J. Michael Collins. He does real well. What do you think it is that, I mean, obviously, if you guys knew the secret, you might be doing it too. I don't know. But do you think there's a secret and do you think it's worth knowing what it is? Or do you think you're really, no matter how well you can do on a pay-to-play or online casting, you can probably still do better off of them, I guess, is my question.
Well, eventually. Now, Melissa had a great point originally. And why don't you address that? Because you were talking about how carefully you select the auditions that are in there. I mean, after a while, you learn, well, this is something that I know I'm good at, and this is something that is within my budget, that sort of thing.
Well, first of all, I don't select I don't go and look at auditions and audition. I only audition for things that people reach out to me for, if they send me a private invitation or a private audition. So they're halfway there anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't waste my time going through and looking at the auditions and picking out and saying, oh, I'm going to audition for this or that. I don't think about it, to tell you the truth. I filter all of that stuff into another folder in my email and I don't remember to check it. So I only audition for things that people send me private invitations for. I look at it. I read the script. If it looks like a quality script and it's something that I'm like, oh, yeah, this is me, I'll audition for it. You know, and my rate is usually three times what they've got down there because they, you know, they, I don't know, we can get into a whole rates discussion about how they're detrimental to the business. But you know, I don't audition that much. I've had success with it because if they're coming to me, I'm one of the few people they're reaching out to. And so they want to hire me anyway. So, you know, fact of the matter is either they pay what my rate is or they don't, and then I don't do it.
But you're doing that off of a free profile or your paid profile?
Oh, no, I have a paid profile. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that kind of brings up, sorry.
Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
Well, that brings up something for me that I feel exists amongst a lot of talent out there. And of course, people should just run their business the way they want. But one of the issues I think with the pay to plays is that people kind of get addicted to them and they forget that there are so many production houses out there. There are agents that are always looking for the right talent. There are video production companies, the list goes on, and it's a bit problematic getting caught up in that auditioning process, just trying to like answer everything that comes through. Because that's time. It's time being eaten up and really at the end of the day, you're playing the numbers game as far as the auditions that you book.
That's a great way to put it. I never would have thought of it as addicting, but anything that you do repeatedly, right. Like you know, Facebook, like how many of us is Facebook like a knee jerk?
Yeah.
Like just like this muscle memory, like anything you do repeatedly can do that. Right. So then you're not focusing time in the right place all the time.
Peter?
Yeah, there's something also in the voiceover industry, and it goes across anything from meetups, conferences, auditions. It's the fear of missing out, FOMO.
FOMO.
A point was raised earlier today on one of the forums that there are these cattle calls also going out via agents. We all saw a $500 job today, which I think JS speculated could have got out to 1,500 or more people. It was a voice bank job. So everyone's leaping for it because it's a job. You get the same thing on the pay to plays. You see it. Oh, I could get it. We're trained to think there's a possibility that we will be the one. And even if the rate is good, we tend to put out of our mind that I'm in a line of 1,500 people. Are they going to hear more than 3 seconds of this? Is my agent even going to afford it? Is the pay-to-play even going to afford it if it's a so-called managed job where the job was probably three times that amount before it got to the talent of 500, which is something we should address, I think.
We'll get to that. You know, okay. And it's an interesting point. But can there may be a bunch of our listeners and viewers, people who are watching and listening at the same time, who may not actually understand what Voice Bank is. You know, who wants to tackle and explain that one?
Yeah. Not me.
Because none of us Melissa, were like, got to be on Voice Bank.
Well,
I had Melissa's and my mic off. Go ahead, Melissa.
Voice Bank?
Yeah.
Explain what that is.
Well, Voice Bank, basically, it's a website where talent cannot put their demos up on Voice Bank. You have to have an agent. Your agent, it's the agents that have a deal with Voice Bank. And agents will put up their roster. They'll put their talents demos up there. People come to Voice Bank, casting directors, producers, whatever, and they select the agents whom they want to send auditions. So they'll mark off, you know, I'd like this agent to send me some auditions, and I'd like this agent and this agent, and that's basically a Voice Bank audition. That's why you see some of the auditions, if you have a lot of agents,
mm-hmm.
you'll see them come through. The same audition come through a few agents sometimes.
Yeah. And usually if it's an East Coast, West Coast thing, it's like you get the one on the West Coast 3 hours later. It's like
East Coast has an advantage. Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting point. Now, how many of you have actually gotten big jobs that have like paid for several years membership in one of these things?
I did.
Anyone want to raise their hand? I'm sure you did.
Yeah, sure.
Well, which means that there are good paying jobs on these sites. I mean, we see them every day.
Well, they're rare, though. I mean, a couple of years ago, I booked a SAG job on Voice 123. It was just it was a weekend. I can only guess that they needed something quickly. But, you know, it was a SAG job. And they got in touch with me. It was late on a Saturday.
They figured being a weekend, they had a better chance.
I guess they needed somebody quickly. I honestly don't know. They sent me the contract. Everything was totally above board. But, you know, this was at a time and through a site where direct contact was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the other site, they're listing SAG-AFTRA. Mm-hmm. But How does that happen? I have a question about how that can possibly happen because there's no direct contact. So, yeah.
Good point.
Well, if it's on voices.com, then you can't have direct contact. If it's Voice 123 or Bidalgo, I guess you can.
Right.
I think that some of the people who are making good money, you know, the story goes like this. Oh, I was hired to do one job on voices.com. Then we started talking. And then outside of the pay to play, they hired me to do the rest of the jobs. And then you have like a 6-figure number that they dangle around. The problem is it's all anecdotal evidence. You know? I don't know if I can trust my fellow voice actors with what they say about their numbers. I don't see their books. They don't the websites themselves don't publish really the numbers, and even then they're not independently verified. So I take all these numbers with a grain of salt. But a while ago, voices.com changed the name of the game a little bit by introducing a platinum membership. At $2,500 a year, and it's reserved to 100 people. And they have one-on-one consultants, you have your own success manager, and it basically means that if you pay them a nice chunk of money, they make sure that you go up in the rankings incrementally. And I've heard from some people that really has paid off for them. But then again, we can't verify it, but that's a way to play the game.
How fair is that to the people that are paying $349?
Yeah.
So if I'm paying my $349, I'm expecting access to everything that I match with. But if they're giving the premium, the platinum people, first access, they're not giving me fair access. So that strikes me as fraudulent.
One of the biggest things that's missing from the pay to play is just in general is a lack of transparency. There is a lack of transparency. And I really just don't see that changing. They're not willing to open up their processes to anyone. And as a result, we're just all in the dark about a lot of these issues until something reaches breaking point, like the premium subscriptions or, you know, the shaving of the shaving off the budget off the top with the managed jobs. And we just don't have enough facts. And it's a real shame.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people have built businesses off this. George was mentioning, you know, a couple of people that like to talk about their success on the pay to plays. Interesting to note that I think that where the discussion gets kind of rough around the edges is that the pay to plays have brought in, I mean, not only are they allowing people to get into the marketplace as voice actors, but it's also exposed a lot more people who are seeking talent, or as we like to call them, producers.
Hey, is there a kid gaming on your network right now, man?
Think of them.
You're crawling right now. You're roboting on us.
More people from more different types of... Say what?
Your bandwidth took a major, major dive. It looks like it might... Yep. It's coming back. Tell the kids to stop BitTorrenting, will you?
Yeah. Get off of that! Damn it. All right. As I was saying, a lot of people who are seeking voice talent now have access to these sites. So we've actually seen a tremendous growth in our industry because of these sites, because it is easy to access a lot of different talent. Now, of course, as we were saying earlier, perhaps these are people that don't necessarily know how much we make, or how much, you know, what it is that they want to do is worth. So is it a good thing, though, that these things came along and expanded this business so that we can all partake of it? Everybody can partake of it, especially people looking for talent. And then it's up to us to educate them if they find us and hire us. Any thoughts on that?
Certainly. If I were a producer, a voice seeker, and I would work with one of those pay to plays, I think that it's a very expensive way to find cheap talent, because you know it's not unusual for people to get over 200 auditions. Are you really going to listen to all those 200 auditions? Some of the research that I've read from Voices.com says that 80% of the auditions are being listened to. Well, think about that. If you have 100 to 200 different auditions and each audition is maybe a minute or 2 minutes long, how long is that going to take? Who's going to do that? You got to pay that person for a $150 job. Like I said, it's an expensive way to find cheap talent.
Yeah.
Why don't you just contact a reputable agent and say, this is the script. This is the type of voice I'm looking for. Can you go into your archive and your talent pool and give me 5 candidates? Send this out to those people you know they can do the job. I'm happy to pay a little bit more, and you know that you get it get the job done.
Or send it out to talent whom you do know. Not long ago, I had a client who asked me, he needed a male voice to do some videos for which I'm doing half of them. He needed a male voice for the other half. He sent me specs, and he asked me if I knew anybody. I sent him 13 talent who I know personally. I gave him some of the copy. They did an audition. I sent him 13 talent. He sent me an email back. He chose one of the 13 that I sent him. They listened to over 80 auditions on voices.com. And he came back to one of the 13 that I sent him, and he kept every one of the ones I sent him in his file for future use. So doesn't that say something?
That says a lot. And you know what? Because there's no quality control.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can join. You know, talent not required. Training not required. Credit card required.
Required, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Interesting, though, that it's what really grew this industry was the internet. I mean, before it was people doing commercials. It was a very sort of closed market. And now it's been opened up to a lot more people.
Speaking of which...
Yes.
Let's make that a teaser and go to a break.
For what? Oh, is it time for a break already?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. By the way, if any of you have a question for that would like to, you know, be part of the roundtable discussion, you are more than welcome to throw it into the chat room. And I believe that somebody's running the chat room tonight. Anthony. Anthony is in there after a harrowing move to a new home. But he's there with us tonight, and he's going to be getting those into the chat room. And we will post some of these and see if we can get the conversation continued along those lines. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here at East West Audio Body Shop talking about pay to plays with some great panelists. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to East West Audio Body Shop.
Learning never ends.
You continue to grow.
Edge Studio has grown. Pursue multiple disciplines in tandem and grow your career. We've added new courses in a new curriculum.
We picked the best coaches from the community of working voice actors.
A new technology division, engineering and consulting, led by George Whittam.
Follow your dream.
Sign up for advanced learning or register for an introduction to voice acting or foundation studies program.
See it all now
at thenewedgestudio.com.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his health.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
Danny did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
We're back here at East West Audio Body Shop. Melissa Axelberth, Peter Bishop, Matt Kalrick, and Paul Strickland are joining us tonight to talk about pay-to-plays. Let's get into a really meaty part of this, because it's always the question of, is this model of business, the pay-to-plays, is it driving down rates? I see that, you know, there are a lot of cheap jobs out there, but there's still a lot of very good paying jobs. Is it that they are creating two different marketplaces, that there's this cheap marketplace and there are people saying, but I know I can find some good people on some of these sites and I'm willing to pay them, you know, a good rate for that? Because I see good paying jobs there every day. I don't always audition for them because, you know, I'm not Puerto Rican or I'm not, Somali or something like that. They're looking for something. Have you ever noticed, though, and this is one of my favorite things, that the people who want something very, very specific, like a spot-on impression, only want to pay you $100 for it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's been like a constant thing. But let's talk about the rates. And who thinks that they've really driven down the rates from stuff that was, you know, very good paying before, commercial work, industrial work for large corporations, that sort of thing. Anybody want to take that on?
Well, I think they have. I mean, for the few times that I actually glanced through the auditions, you can't really filter them on Voice123, but on voices.com you can filter by budget. And everything is $100 to $250. You've got a few in the $250 to $500, and very few in the four figures. And usually what's in the four figures are commercial buyouts, international, for all media now in existence or to yet be invented. It's ridiculous. So I've seen the rates drop precipitously there, but I also have to wonder, I've seen jobs, I have to wonder sometimes at the end client, are they paying that much less? Because, I mean, we've all heard a lot of stories. I can only speak for what I know personally. And I'll just tell you what happened to me not long ago, a couple weeks ago. A local producer contacted me for an audition, and it was just a short video. The rate was $800, which is a job that I convert work, non-union work, to union work, which is very, very easy to do for non-broadcast work, as long as the budget's there. $800, more than enough, well over scale for this type of work. And a half hour later, I got a private audition from Voices.com for the exact same job in the $250 to $500 category. Where did that other, where did that other money go? I mean, you know, we're talking $550 to $300. Where does, I don't know, is the end client paying the $800 and it's only being posted for $250 to $500? Now, if it's being posted for $250 to $500, I mean, I would automatically bid more than the high end of that range for the job. Again, I convert work, so, you know, I usually don't bid less than $550 for a job, say, if we're being, you know, totally upfront and honest here. So, but how many talent would bid the $250? So if it's $800 from one source and $250 to $5 from another, where's the rest of that going?
Mm. I'll have to find that out.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to.
You will never find out. I can tell you that. You will never. They won't tell you, even if they take the $300. You will never hear that. And the client pays an extra 10% for their SurePay system. You know, say, we keep your money for you because we protect our voice talent. That's another 10% that doesn't go to voice talent, but that goes to the coffers of voices.com. So it's shady. Like, I think we all agree that, but that we would like to see more transparency, not a yearly report about the state of the voiceover business with numbers that nobody can check. But, you know, the price of living goes up every year. Do the suggested or suggestive, I call them suggestive rates on a site like voices.com, do they go up? Does the minimum rate for a job, which is $100 on voices.com, did it ever go up? I don't see it go up. Have the rates increased for the past couple of years at that site? They have not. They only go down. And so I do believe that they have cheapened the business because they have increased their market share. There is a place for them. People find it very easy and convenient to use. But, and you know, like I said in the beginning, we also have to think about ourselves because we have people in our midst who are willing to work for beer money. And by doing that, by accepting these jobs at a low pay, we're telling the client, this is what I'm willing to accept.
Hmm. What is the solution I'm sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Well, I just think in that sense, and I am absolutely on the side of Melissa and Paul and what they've said, but in a lot of cases, I think that while we will sometimes say pay-to-plays have brought the prices down, in other cases, they are just the vehicle for it when we're really the ones driving it. And I say that because I think, you know, a lot of us need to be all about taking accountability for this industry. And yeah, a lot of people are just using those sites to bring it down. And I think a possible issue might be that with the pay-to-plays being so fast-paced and it's all very immediate, there's a lot of competition out there, like a lot of people are bidding on the job. And I'm speaking from personal experience here of what I used to do that I became acutely aware of and then tried to change my practice. But what I would do is that I was afraid to ask lots of questions of the client and, you know, clarify usage and, you know, just have a back and forth because there's always this urgency and it feels like, oh, they'll just go with another talent. And I just wonder if there are any other people out there who have at some point or still do feel that problem where if they rock the boat a bit, the voice, the producer is going to just go with someone easier to work with. And I feel like, you know, these are all factors that can be bringing down rates.
I think it's worth noting that the other thing that we're doing ourselves a disservice with, and one of the pay-to-pay problems is that they do, it's, as has been said, anyone with a credit card, we will constantly have the industry filled because everyone wants to be in show business. There will always be someone willing to do the fair rate $600 job for $100 or less. They will always be there because they want to call themselves, they want to get their one job a year, call themselves a VO. Fine. What we have is a very efficient platform for people. Clients are now trained that good enough is good enough. I think standards are going down, and therefore we expect the price to go down with the standard. I think a lower standard is being accepted for a lot of things now. And that's partly our problem as well. We're not, we've got to boost the status of professional VO. Not, I mean, paying $100 on voices.com is one step better than getting Doreen in the typing pool to do it. But we've got to train people to go up, not come down in an acceptable level of quality. How many times you listen to an e-learning thing where your ears are bleeding halfway through it because the person just can't deliver? Clients, some clients think that's acceptable. So they need training, not just on price, but on quality. What quality a reasonable price gets them. That will do is not good enough.
Yeah. Let me throw this out there, because this is one of the things that it always irks me, is bidding. I don't like to think of myself as a paving contractor, that I can do the job as cheaper than somebody else. Yet all of these sites generally always present a range. And sometimes it's a big range and sometimes it's a small range. Well, if they're willing to go to the upper range, why not just bid the upper range? But they're going to get somebody, if they want to get somebody cheaper, you know, I mean, that's their right to find, try and find somebody cheaper, but are they going to find somebody that is going to be qualified to do what they want to do? You know, what do you guys think about this bidding thing? And is there a way we can stop that?
Well, the voice talent is doing the bidding. Paul, go ahead. Yeah, the voice talent is doing the bidding, right? In this case, so it's in our hands. That's the whole thing.
Like Matt said,
voices became a commodity sold by the lowest bidder to the cheapest client. That's the tragedy. Sold to the lowest bidder by the lowest bidder to the cheapest client. And that's what this whole system is based on.
And that's because we let third parties who do not know the business of the business, nor do they care about the business of the business. Remember, they run websites. To insert themselves into the business and make it up. It kills me when I see people talk about standard non-union rates. What are standard non-union rates? And then they point to rate cards posted by the non-union, you know, the pay-to-plays. And they have no reflection. They're made up. If you want standard rates, or, and I don't want this to get into a union, non-union discussion, but union rates were negotiated between the industry and union talent. They negotiated, they came to rates that all sides felt were fair. These are the people paying the rates and the people doing the jobs. So the best standard for any of these rates is to go to the union rates and then adjust it yourself. Some talent adjust up, some talent adjust down. There are also, when you hire somebody to do a union job, that's not all the producer pays. The producer pays a percentage to health insurance and pension plans, which we all have to pay. So the producer pays that on top. And there are other things that they pay as well. So you need to actually add more to scale to get to what the producer pays. So any talent, I feel, should go to the union rates, see what those are, and then, you know, I mean, everybody runs an individual business. Everybody has a different situation, but use that to adjust, whether up or down.
And that information is publicly available?
Publicly available on the SAG-AFTRA websites, although I got to say, the contracts are Byzantine in their complexity. You need a secret decoder ring to figure it out.
Right.
And actually, a couple of us have written up a number of things deciphering the union contracts. And I mean, we could talk about this later. Dan is aware of this. We're putting up a website where this is going to be some of the material, you know, educational material that we're putting up so that everybody can understand the union contracts and the union rates. Because, you know, we want to make this accessible to everybody, because the only way to really live in this century, I mean, we've got to take advantage of the technology. We can't allow the people who don't care about our business to be in command of the technology of today.
Yeah.
So we've got to do that. And we need non-union talent and union talent to be on the same page as far as what is the value of your work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I always say I don't have a horse in the race when it comes to this, the union versus non-union. I can just say that I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for a seed of union talent who had the level of jobs that justified the need for a really nice studio, then could justify the cost of hiring me. I wouldn't be doing what I do today with my first 30 clients were all union. It could have grown a completely different way. It could have been grown from non-union talent, but it would have taken probably much longer. I mean, how do I know? I can't predict the future, but I really do feel like part of me being able to be and do what I do for a living and just do only this one thing and not moonlight doing 50 things
is
because of those rates that were established. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And they were established not only the people who do them, but the people who pay them.
Yeah.
Okay. Not by people who don't work in our industry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that requires really a focus on the bigger picture. And I think that the people who belong to the union, they operate from a sense of solidarity. If we as a group collectively bargain, you know, whereas I think the people who join pay to plays are more the individuals. I do my thing my way. And if I get $20, that's $20 I didn't make yesterday. You know?
Yeah.
I don't. That's one of the things I get when I write my blogs. But, you know, it's my business. I can just charge whatever I want of it. I don't care about the rest of you. It's really a me and a we thing. And one of the nicer things that the World Voices organization is trying to do with a sort of a, you know, online casting site is that it becomes something that is by us, from us, for us. And it's from this whole idea of solidarity.
It's so solidarity.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I mean, and education, because a lot of people charge low rates because they don't know any better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? I've said it on this show and I'll say it again. I think in this day and age where information is readily available, ignorance is no longer an excuse.
Yeah. Let's shift it a little bit here because we're talking about rates. One of the big differences that we've seen in the last 10 years is the real shift in media that, you know, and I think we all know that most broadcast voiceover work is a tiny little percentage of what really is available out there. And that a lot of agencies are starting to find that it's worth advertising on the internet. I was actually reading in the Wall Street Journal this morning, because I actually take the time to read the Wall Street Journal in the morning these days. They were talking about how a lot of advertising agencies are having trouble getting good people because their creative people are going to websites as marketing people for websites and getting people to advertise on the internet. That presents an interesting question. Now, Matt, you like to talk about the internet rates, and are they competitive with broadcast rates, and is that driving things down? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think it's driving things down as much as there's not a whole lot of thought going on about it at the moment. I mean, it's certainly growing from where it was even, I think, 6 months ago, a year ago. But what's absolutely happening is internet media is becoming more like broadcast. And at the moment, the current model is certainly in the non-broadcast spectrum, non-union spectrum, is charging for internet as non-broadcast. Now that's, I'm sure, not the case for every single talent out there. There are probably people doing things in their own individual way. But the accepted standard is that internet is non-broadcast. And my thought is what's needed, and a few of us have been bouncing around with this concept. I've spoken with X about it, and we had a discussion at Wovo. Just the notion of adjusting the way we charge for internet to reflect that move into broadcast. And the standard for internet is usually a buyout. Some people will negotiate a year's use for an internet video, particularly if it's for a high profile client, maybe getting a lot of traffic. You might just specify 1 year. But with YouTube pre-roll, Instagram ads, what else is that? And then the Spotify radio, Pandora radio.
Pandora.
All those internet radio stations. Not only are they getting the ads for periods of play, it's also high volume, targeted towards particular demographics. And essentially the advertiser, the client, is buying for a certain number of impressions on viewers online. So I guess the conversation is, how do we adjust internet rates to reflect the old broadcast rates?
Right. And that was going to be my next question. What can we do about this to make sure that the people who are buying in these particular new mediums, which are just spreading very, very rapidly, how do we educate them? What do you think we can do to change that? Just tell them, obviously.
Yeah. Well, something that I brought up at WervoCon was just ask your client or the buyer ask them, can you tell me a bit more about this project? How is the voiceover being used? Are you doing pay-per-click ads? Is it going on internet radio? Is it going on YouTube pre-roll? How long is it going to be played for? Are you targeting demographics? Are you buying a certain number of impressions, or are you buying a certain amount of reach? And that, it's all still up in the air, but for me, what I've been playing around with, and I know some other talent have as well, all of that information informs you in what you give as an end rate to the client. And if you want to base it on traditional broadcast rates, in that a voiceover is being used for a year on TV, or if it's being used for a year on radio, that's a factor for your rate. And then maybe it's being played in X many markets, like, Chicago, LA, New York, whatever. And my thought is that a possible parallel with internet is, how many people are you reaching with this spot? And that's another factor to give you that end rate.
Yeah, I think it's Connie Terwilliger always likes to talk about ears and eyeballs.
Exactly.
How do you determine that?
Well, a lot of the jobs that I've booked for internet broadcast media have been through agents. So it's come through in a prepackaged way. And then I know a lot of us work for Spotify, Pandora, and there is a standard for that at the moment. But as those mediums evolve and more people are using them, more advertisers are flocking to them, I think that what's needed is a different way of charging for that. And just something that I've been throwing around, I don't know how many people caught this on, I think it was the maybe it was the VoiceOver Pros Facebook group or a Wovo Facebook group, just suggesting that if you take a base amount of impressions of 100,000 views, say on a YouTube video, and if the client pays for an extra 100,000 views, then you can multiply that base rate by, say, 1.1. Then they add on another 100,000, you can multiply it by 1.2. You know, that's just a possibility. Really, there's no perfect solution at this stage. But going back to how we as a collective, going back to collective bargaining with the union and just moving as a collective, it's something that we need to talk about before producers and clients dictate how internet media is paid for and how it's used.
Peter?
Yeah, I think this issue is getting attacked from both ends, because I heard a few discussions on podcasts. To separate these things out, you've got the Spotify Radio, Pandora, which are very much radio models. But the value about advertising in the podcasting networks, where it's not like a radio that's on, it's someone's chosen to go there. So the value of the click is much higher. So they're trying to negotiate from their end how much they charge for people to advertise. So everything's up in the air. And I think the industry has got to address this, because so much more programming, especially when you talk about podcasts which contain adverts, are targeted and selected. You do the same with YouTube. People just don't have YouTube on in the background. When they choose to pick a certain, the eyeballs and ears are there. It's just not noise in the background. It's something they've chosen to watch. And the media, the content producers are saying that makes the advertising worth more in the first place, because it's a very selective vertical market we're addressing. So it's being attacked from both ends. And I think it's got to resolve itself soon outside the radio model on a specific internet podcasting, new media type of model where the eyes and ears are so much more valuable than just radio or TV.
Well, once again, this presupposes that there is a dialogue between the voice talent and the client. And on many times on these play-to-play sites, that's not the case. Either it's forbidden or they pick somebody who just bid a lower number than you did. So it's, you know, I'm all for that, but we need to fix that system. And one of the things that annoys me tremendously is the lack of information that you find in job descriptions. And I think they do it on purpose. They don't tell you what the market is. Sometimes they don't even tell you it's for radio or TV or something else. You just have to guess. And it's like shooting darts in the dark. You know, they put you as a voice talent in a dark room and say, here's a dart. Now, somewhere is the bullseye. And we expect you to hit that bullseye, but we're not going to tell you where it is. Just bid whatever you think. And you're just guessing. That's not bidding.
Well, it's so tricky when you see internet leads on the pay-to-plays. I've seen leads where it's an internet job, so it's only going to be used on the internet, and it pays as low as $150. You know, see the $100 stuff, but even for $300 or $400, $500, if you just got a buyout for an internet media thing, if that video was being played to 12 million people through paid advertising. And again, until the end of time, like Melissa mentioned before, like media not invented yet until, you know, in all perpetuity, that's essentially what you are getting yourself into when you say yes to an internet job that pays whatever budget, because there's no limitation on how it can be used on the internet.
Interesting conversation. Go ahead, Melissa.
Now, that also brings up brings another point up that when you do jobs through pay-to-play sites, especially when you have to complete the job through the site and send it through the site and click all sorts of things like I agree and all of that, you need to read the fine print as to what you're agreeing to, because sometimes the fine print contains phrases like this is a buyout in perpetuity, this is work for hire. What that means is if you're doing something that's a corporate video, say a corporate anthem or something like that, that's supposed to be internal, all right, it's not supposed to be public, but yet you're agreeing to terms that say this is work for hire and you're turning over the rights to that piece of work, then part of that can be lifted for a commercial. That could get you into trouble, especially if you've got a spot running with a conflict where you're supposed to be exclusive, you can get sued.
Interesting. Let's get to some of the questions here from our voluminous audience tonight, which is just huge, which we're grateful that you're all joining us tonight. Let's start off here with Jay Sawyer, a question for the panel. Asking about VoiceOver Planet, does it still exist? Does anyone know about VoiceOver Planet and how does it work compared to other P2Ps? Anybody still over at VOP?
No.
No. I think that answers that question, Jay.
I think it attained a level of irrelevance.
Very quickly, yes. The real Amy Fisher asks, so what should the mom and pop shops and entrepreneurs who need to advertise and can't afford all the hoops and red tape and money to book a studio and an engineer and a talent do when it comes to needing a voiceover? Yeah, I would say some of us know how to produce all this stuff in our own little personal studios.
It's a really open question, but I feel like sometimes the whole mom and pop thing is a bit of a cop out. When businesses say, "Oh, you know, we're just small, we're just local," you're investing in your business, just like any of us do when we take training or we buy new equipment or we go marketing, we hire a consultant. It's all money that's spent in your business, and I think that if they really don't have the budget to hire a professional, then they should just go on Fiverr. I don't want to work with them anyway.
No. I think that you're absolutely right, because there's no way for us to determine whether or not it is a mom and pop shop, you know, or, you know, it's a student project. We have a limited budget. Those are all euphemisms. We don't know what a limited budget is. A limited budget for an NBC producer is a huge budget for a mom and pop shop. You know, people, they have a vested interest in showing themselves off as, you know, we don't have money, in order to, you know, buy things as cheaply as they can. You know, they're in business, we're in business to make money. So you got to keep your expenses down in order to have the revenue go up. It's a simple model, but I think many times we are being fooled and we are the ones paying the price.
Absolutely. Steve Tardio, question for the panel. Does anyone from the panel agree with SAG-AFTRA saying that non-union production is hurting our industry and we should be taking a stand for producers to turn their non-union work into union projects? X, I think that one's for you.
No, we have a side. Okay. We have a sidebar. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, we stop had a sidebar.
Pay attention.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about.
Okay. What's going on here is, first of all, in the commercial world, the difference in what talent gets paid, union and non-union in the commercial world is huge. It's really, really huge. It's, you know, a lot of talent say, oh my God, this is great. They're going to pay me $4,000 for four spots and they're going to run for a year. $4,000 sounds like a big number, but that's not a great deal. There's a huge difference between in commercial work, between, union work and non-union work. And yeah, that's affecting the bottom line when it comes to union work. So the union itself has created an initiative to make people aware of that difference. Now, if you're talking about non-broadcast work, which is the bulk of the work that we all do, it's the money that pays the mortgage. You know, we're not all booking national union spots every day. We're not all booking national non-union spots every day. You know, the bulk of the work is really the corporate work. I don't know. I know. I mean, a lot of non-union work pays as much as union work and more. So it's. I think there's a lot that needs to. There's a lot that needs to be clarified. There's the fact that union talent can convert non-union work into union work if it's non-broadcast. Some broadcast can be done too, but that gets really complicated. That's something that people don't know. Non-union talent probably don't realize that they're charging union rates already as it is, especially if you're doing long form and you're doing work for multiple hours, because a lot of talent don't discount the second hour or the third hour, whereas scale rates will do that. So it depends. In the commercial world, absolutely, there's a huge difference.
Anybody else want to talk on that one? All right, I'll move on to the next question. Because this is something everybody wants to know about. Question from the group from Uncle Roy Yokelson. Voiceover.biz, the World Voices Organization talent casting. Anyone want to discuss? Well, I will say, well, Peter and I will happily discuss this one, because it's not a casting site per se. It literally is a searchable directory of our professional membership. And, you know, it's the real idea there is that we want people to go there and look at the talent that's there and contact them directly and privately and get rid of a lot of this, the bidding, and just really make it a one-on-one thing. Bish, your thoughts?
Well, I really only want to make two points here. One is to dispel the myth that some people still think they put it in with the pay-to-plays. It's a free member benefit. There is nothing extra to pay for it. But what it does have going for it mainly is that, unlike the you just have to be alive and have a credit card, the restriction for getting on the voiceover.biz list is coming up to certain prescribed professional standards. So anyone that goes there to look is not going to get buried in hopefuls, people that record in their bathroom with a USB mic, which is across the board with all the pay-to-plays. They are going to get responses, or they're going to find a list of professionally qualified talent who have met certain criteria. That's the main thing. That's our differentiator. And that's why we're trying to build the list as a service to our members, not as a cash cow or anything like that. No one's making a profit off this. It's been put together simply as a service to our professional members where they can showcase themselves, and we're actually getting clients coming, looking at the list, finding people, and people have attained work through this. It's building slowly, and we're trying to spread the word, basically, to all possible clients. Come and have a look at a list of pre-screened talent. Simple as that.
Yeah. Now we do have, and we're discussing this, which is a great thing about World Voices, is that we talk about these things. We're not just some corporate guy saying, well, how can we make the most money here? We're trying to find out what is best for everybody in the business, and certainly what's best for everybody in our organization. One of the things that we're talking about is cattle calls. Cattle calls, they may have a place for something. But it's a very different business these days, where we've got, you know, hundreds of people, you know, who are trying to vie for these jobs, as we've been talking about. Instead, limit it to five. You're going to find somebody who can do what you need to do on the site and ask them privately, or ask five people to audition for it. Because we don't like to think of it so much as a casting site, the way the pay-to-plays are playing that game with it. We want people to come and find the best talent and make the decisions themselves, working with our talent, not through a third party. All righty. Michael Blaha asks, in terms of rates for a newbie completely starting out, what are good resources for figuring out how to find out what rates to set and ask for? I think we mentioned a few of those earlier. What were some of those? Well, obviously, the SAG-AFTRA cards, and there are all sorts of places that you can find different sets of rates.
Edge.com.
Edge.com.
We're
one of our sponsors.
We're also putting up Joe Davis, and I have been working together for a while, and we're launching a site towards the end of the week, the weekend, where we're explaining a lot of the rates, you know, the union rates and stuff, and just putting a lot of that information up there. All sorts of information, myths. There's tons of myths in VO. It's gonna be a forum as well, because there's so much really, really good discussion going on in so many different areas all over the place, some in private forums. And we'd like to get more participation on that from talent, from agents, from all of that. It'll be a place where people can put up demos and things like that. If people want to cast pros, we're going to have a link to voiceover.biz, to the WoVo, the WoVo site. And I think it's just with so many small things that are all over the place, it'll be a place to come for that kind of information. We're going to be asking people to contribute their stuff. Peter's been writing stuff. A lot of people have, just asking people to contribute their knowledge and putting it all up in that one place. So
it's a great interface too. The way Joe designed it is it's got a lot of different categories that you can work with. Really search if you're looking for something very, very specific. I'll be writing some stuff for it. I know Melissa, you're going to write some stuff for it, and everybody should go over there and check it out and register and a great place to have a conversation and more discussion on the business.
How do you guys plan to market it? Because obviously, we that are in the know and in the loop will find out about it pretty quickly. But the people I think we want to reach the most, right, are the new talent. How the heck do we get through cut through the noise of what's out there so that they're going
to
see it?
Well, that's going to be up to all of us.
Yeah.
And I think, we have a large community. We really, really do. And all of us know hundreds of people who do what we do. You know, so it's really, it's a large community. It's a cohesive community. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can all do this, you know, and I think it's a way for all of us to take control of our business. You know, the model is there. When, you know, the internet is here.
Is this almost like Union 2.0 in some weird way?
It doesn't have anything to do with
well, it's not a union, but it's like it's post union. It's almost like post union.
Well, you know, the union has been lax in coming into the 21st century with a lot of things. It's a large organization, you know, change takes a lot of time and meetings and time and things like that. And I think that, you know, we're much more agile. We can use today's technology to really take take control of our industry. Mm-hmm. And information is the key to it. You know, information is really what it all is. So,
I think that World Voices is setting a new standard for what it means to be a professional voice talent, not only technically, but also in terms of rate. And I think I'll make a prediction because based on my website, the page that is second of all the pages that's most visited on my website is my rates page. I've been very open about posting my rates. And I keep track of that thing. So as long as you type in like the keywords voiceover rates, my page will come up, and the same thing will happen for your organization. I think that people want to know. There's this hunger for that information from an independent, knowledgeable source, and World Voices is going to be that source.
Well, we're certainly trying. We certainly have some qualified people. Bish?
Yeah, I just want to throw in as well one of the... I don't want to make this an advert for Wovo, but one of my new position.
But go ahead.
One of the things that I was very happy to be instrumental in putting in place was our mentoring program. Now, we have the two levels, the professionals we've talked about, but even people that are trying to get a foothold in the industry can become associate members. And we have a, please note the word, free mentoring service to keep people out of the clutches of the charlatans that might be out there selling all sorts of things of dubious quality. Always do your research. Where we'll match up professional members with associates or whoever to actually help them and guide them through the path. And we are so happy when we can transition an associate member to a professional member. So it's one of the main, education is one of the main things we try and push forward with World Voices. And that's just because we are a big community, the whole voiceover community. And it's all about helping each other towards a better product, basically.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons we came up with voiceover.biz was we saw a need for, you know, making sure that people could find a good place to get to find voices. And it's also a good place for people to learn. One of the things that we're really trying to push with that is, you know, we're not trying to market this to voice actors. We're marketing voiceover.biz to producers, people who are going to hire us, and we want to educate them. There'll be a blog there talking about why do you want to hire professional voice talent? What does it take to be professional voice talent? You know, why you need to pay well to get good professional voice talent. It's not easy. It's not, you know, you want to walk into our bedrooms and say something and it's there. People need to be educated, and we want to educate people how to work with voice actors. What is it that we do, and how can we make the process better? Matt?
Yeah, I'm sorry if this has already been said. I was hanging out with the chat room there.
Show within a show.
Yeah. One of the great things that Wovo is willing to do is that if you have a difficult issue in our industry, like, you know, bringing in a new system of rates, of how we charge for internet, or just, you know, a raise in rates in general, if there's a certain level of discomfort going to a big production company or a big talent buyer, like if you feel nervous about that as an individual, Wovo is like willing to collaborate and put together a document and approach businesses and production houses, producers as a collective. And there's a lot of power in that.
All righty. Well, we're boy, this one has gone on, and
we clearly are going to visit this again.
Absolutely.
In a few more months, you know, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's important. It affects a lot of people. There's a lot of strong opinions, and we want to make sure as many different areas of the business are heard in this discussion, right?
Absolutely.
So we're going to keep doing this.
Yeah, and it needs to be discussed. It needs to be out in the open.
Yeah, and there's other people who have some very good opinions on this, and a lot of them are in the chat room tonight, so we have to get them on as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got to wrap things up into a nice tight little bow here, but we want to thank our fantastic panel tonight. Some of my favorite people in voiceover, of course, everybody in voiceover, with maybe a few exceptions, are my favorite people in voiceover. Melissa Axelberth, Peter Bishop, Matt Kalrick, Paul Strickwood of Fabulous having you with us tonight. Your insight and knowledge and experience is always valuable to everybody that tunes into our show when you're on. And we're grateful having you on tonight. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All at once. All right.
That was great. Take a beat. And
we'll be right back after this.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Now back to EWAVS. Thank Dan and George's wives. For what? You have no idea. Now, here's Dan and George.
All righty. Well, first off, thanks again to our guests tonight, because they are just fabulous, and it was great for them to join us. Also, we'd like to thank our donors this week, people who are, you know, giving to the show. You know, I just got to notice that we went way over our bandwidth and viewer hours this month. So, and that actually cost us, and we appreciate everybody for chipping in. Some of our donors this week, the one and only Eric Aragone, who never misses, Amy Fisher, Shelley Avellino, voiceovers, Diana Birdsall, and Amy Sorenzi, plus a bunch of other people. Thanks for donating. You can donate by going right above my head right now, and there's a button that says donate now. And, you know, it's right through PayPal. You can pay us, you can do it once a month. You can do it in one huge lump sum. And we promise not to keep a tote board, but we really appreciate all your help on that. Plug for narrator.com, narratorhelper.com.
Yes, yes. We're having a site. But there's
Would
always
you stop that already.
Yeah, you know, there's things going on. I won't even bring up what's going on at this end right now. It's crazy. Voiceover, if you're doing long form voiceover, narration, audiobooks, things like that, and you need help, you're getting in over your head. You definitely could use a hand. Narratorhelper.com. That's Amy Golan's service. She's doing proofing, editing, and mastering. So if you need that kind of thing, either it's your first book, or you're a working voice actor, you've been doing it forever, you decided that somebody dragged you into doing your first ACX book, they're like, we loved your voice, please do it. You definitely want narratorhelper.com.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Jack DeGolia this week.
What did he do? Did he bite off?
Because he's doing the show logs, then this is probably... He does it in shorthand. But all the stuff that we were talking about tonight and everybody's points will be on the show logs, which are accessible also from this webpage, just up to my left there. Also, the podcast. I think this is going to make a great podcast. It's on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and ewabs.podbean.com. And if you haven't liked us on Facebook, are you alive? I think we erased that one, George. It's time to get rid of that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Maybe. That one ran out about probably about 90 episodes ago. Also, we'd like to thank our amazing sponsors, Harlan Hogan, VoiceOver Extra, and Ed Studio for providing an uninterrupted live stream and bandwidth.
Other than Ella, who came in and wanted to interrupt the bandwidth, but
she did. But she looks great doing it.
Yeah, you got to, you know, she gets away with a lot. I'm really scared for when she's a teenager. I'm just downright frightened.
Oh, and it happens so fast. You won't believe where the years went. Let's see. We need to thank our wives.
As we know,
you have no idea. Kathy Curtin, our fantastic producer, for helping us put together this fantastic panel tonight.
Thank you.
Anthony Gettig for religiously looking in the chat room and getting people out there and getting their questions on the show here. Shelley Avellino for helping out when he can't do it. Jack DeGoli, of course, for doing the show logs.
Voluminous.
Lots of it. And Tim McKean for working on the VoiceOver Essentials, which you can see on YouTube.com. And how do they find EWABS on YouTube? I think they just type in EWABS, right?
Yeah, EWABS is not a particularly common phrase, so you'll find it pretty fast.
Yeah. All right. And Lee Penny for just being Lee Penny. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. By the way, we have a new Mugman. For those of you who have been waiting for a new Mugman episode, I had a lot to do with this one because it was a vision came to me and Jacob sort of took it and ran with it. So stay tuned for that, and then we'll get into the post show after this. So stay tuned, and thanks for being with us. We'll see you next Monday night. Who's on next week? I think we're going to talk about audiobooks next week. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, we are talking. I mean, that's the last note that I saw. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Oh, so we might be. And then we're having a fan roundtable on June 15th that says Dan will be out until late, but no, I'll be here. So.
Oh, you will.
But I will wear my tux anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, I'm Dan Leonard, still in the East for just a short bit.
And I'm George Woodham in the West for a long bit.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, Dan. That YouTube link.
Yes?
PNH7RMUU3JQ?
Yeah.
I'm trying to load it right now. I don't know why it's not loading.
Well, go to mugman.net and then just click on the dollar store.
There you go. It says the page not available. So, go to Mugman. Grab it, guys. I guarantee it's funny. It always is. Thanks for everybody for watching. See you next time.